Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1.
The Thinking Atheist. It's not a person. It's a symbol. An idea.
The population of atheists in this country is going through the roof.
Rejecting faith. Pursuing knowledge. Challenging the sacred.
If I tell the truth, it's because I tell the truth. Not because I put my hand on a book and made a wish.
And working together for a more rational world.
Take the risk of thinking for yourself. Much more happiness, truth, beauty, and wisdom will come to you that way.
Assume nothing. Question everything. And start thinking. This is the Thinking Atheist Podcast, hosted by Seth Andrews.
So I hesitated on doing this story, but it's been on my mind for weeks. I just can't get it out of my head. And you know, when I've got something spinning around in my brain, I'm likely to open up the microphone and talk about it to you. And that's what I'm going to do today. I did this speech. It was back in 2014, the Unholy Trinity tour. We went to Australia. I did a speech called The Good Old Days. It's on YouTube. You can find it easy. And this is a common mantra for me. Seth the Optimist. You and I live in this world where the news cycle has decided, you know, if it bleeds, it leads. You don't see a whole lot about the everyday good deeds, the good stuff that humans do for each other. I mean, there's some feel-good stuff that's out there here and there on social media, some warm fuzzies, ooh-ah, look at this amazing thing, it gives you hope for humanity. And then the news programs obviously like to do the kicker stories. If you don't know what a kicker is, this is a broadcast term. Something we used to use when I was on the radio. We did radio news and television stations do it as well, usually any newscast. And it's something that you can see formatically. Okay, the news program opens up with hard news, the hard stuff that's going on in the nation and in the world. Then probably the weather, then sports, and then whatever. And the last few minutes of the newscast, that's where they put the kicker. Okay, they've already hit you over the head, you know, the coronavirus and the conflict in the Middle East and the stock market, and there's a shooting at the park and the statistics on violent crime and the politicians are bitching at each other. The whole world's on fire, right? This is the first half of most newscasts. If it's a local newscast, at least here in Oklahoma, mostly it's just like local shootings, you know, a house fire, that kind of stuff, right? If it bleeds, it leads. But keep your eyes open and watch this, because at the end of a newscast, you will see them do what we call the kicker. Okay? Kicker is a warm, fuzzy story that's supposed to leave the audience with a good taste in its mouth. It's a way for the newscasters, after all they put you through, to try to end on a high note. There's a little bit of fluff and happiness and joy, joy feelings, and the sun is shining and smiles all around, right? A kid wins the spelling bee and he gets his time on camera. There's a cat rescued from a sewer drain by the fire department, and then the fire department adopts the animal as its mascot, right? There's a high school marching band nearby wins the state or a national contest. There's a celebrity couple that gets married, maybe a story about the royal family. I don't know. It's a sports team that visits a child in a cancer hospital. That's a kicker. These types of stories are placed strategically at the end of a newscast for the single purpose of making sure that you don't hate the world. I mean, you don't leave the broadcast totally feeling like shit. It's supposed to give you hope for humanity after all the preceding hopelessness. All right, that's the kicker. And I like feel-good stories. I mean, I'm a sucker for feel-good stories, as long as they're real. I'm not being manipulated with false information, but I enjoy the, you know, the hope for humanity stuff. But we don't often hear about the everyday kindnesses of people, the non-newsworthy stuff that people do for each other, because, you know, the other stuff, the violent stuff and the crazy stuff and the scandals and the conflict. I mean, that's just so loud and in your face. It gets all the attention. You hear about the mass shooter, but you don't really hear too much. You'll hear some, but you don't hear as much about the students and teachers on the scene who scrambled to protect each other, the police officers who were there in the active shooter situation, who put themselves on the line in harm's way to eliminate the threat, which is their job, or the emergency workers who patched people up, or the neighbors and the counselors and the friends and family who comforted, or the potentially millions of good people all around the world who offered some kind of assistance, financial or otherwise, right? They wanted to be a part of a solution. Don't hear as much about those. The charities that were founded in the name of those who were killed, the commitment made by communities and community leaders to fight violence and violent people to try to create a more peaceful world. We talk about them. We talk about him, but not nearly to the proportion that we talk about the guy who had the AR-15. All right, we talk about the convenience store robber with a knife. We don't talk about the hundreds of people, peaceful, good people, who just walked in and out of the convenience store earlier that day. You know, they bought a coffee and a candy bar, and they said hi and please and thank you and have a nice day. We don't hear about those people. You see something like two neighbors involved in a lawsuit, like a nasty lawsuit over something like, it's like that guy who did the zombie nativity scene, right, where he had the zombie baby Jesus and neighbor got offended. And I think somebody may have sued somebody else and the city had to get involved in the courts. I mean, that kind of, I mean, you find these stories, but you don't hear about the hundreds of other people in the neighborhood who live in peace and harmony and get along and do their thing and wave to each other as they drive by and walk their dogs on the sidewalks and their kids play in the yard. And you don't hear about any of that stuff. Hundreds upon hundreds of people in the same neighborhood who get no press. All right, so you get the idea. I remain convinced that most people are good. Most people out there, most of our fellow human beings are good. But, you know, I also admit that emotionally, for me, this attitude is not always easy. I mean, sometimes I'm like you, and I wonder and I worry about the human condition, the humanity, what's wrong with us? And this perspective sort of gets overwhelmed. I drown in pessimism and cynicism and just kind of a head-shaking lament about what my fellow human beings can be capable of. Let me tell you about a recent story which brought me to this place, and it's been on my mind. It's not an easy story to tell. It's not an easy story to hear. In fact, you are welcome to skip ahead 5 minutes if you want to. But I will say this much. I think the last half of the story validates getting through the first half. I think the last half will make the first half worth it. I'll just put that caveat out there at the beginning, okay? I've done a lot of work with the Tulsa Humane Society. You guys know me, right? I'm a supporter of the Humane Society. For those who are not familiar, it's a rescue organization for the prevention of abuse and the neglect of animals. They're a resource for animal adoption and veterinary care and rescue and rehab. And I followed their posts online. Well, it was a day last month when I again saw something that made me question humanity. On February 27th, they posted this on Facebook, and I'll just read it verbatim. It said, "Today's one of those days when you question humanity. Meet Atlas," and they had these tragic photographs of a dog. "Meet Atlas. We received a call from the Creek County Sheriff's Office alerting us to a dog they needed assistance with. Both back legs were strapped together and the dog was unable to move from the field he was dumped in. A lady in the area had been leaving him food and water because he'd been dumped there. Not only was he dumped in a field with his back legs strapped together, glue had been poured into his ears, and then fast food wrappers had been shoved into the ears and stuck into the glue. One ear canal is so bad it looks like he will need surgery. Some type of chemical had been dumped on his face and ears. It appears his ears have been partially burned or cut off. And if this wasn't bad enough, his x-ray showed a BB lodged inside of him, so he'd been shot with a BB gun, too. From the moment we met him, he wasn't mean, vicious, or protectively aggressive. He just wanted help and warmed up to us as he realized we were there to help. We took him to our partners at VCA Woodland Central Animal Hospital, and they went to work. After hours of removing the glue from Atlas's ears and treating him with ointments and creams, we are happy to report he's starting to rest comfortably. Caring for Atlas over the next several weeks will be costly. He may need to see specialists and require surgery. Please help in any way you can. We need to show Atlas that people are good. Also, if you have any information about the individuals responsible for abusing this poor boy, please contact the Creek County Sheriff's Office. We don't want them to do this ever again. Now, you're thinking what I'm thinking right now. People suck. Who could do this? What the hell would motivate somebody to do this, to torture a dog like this, bind his legs and burn his skin and abandon him in a field to, what, starve to death? The photographs show him, and they just will break your heart. Break your heart. One day later, the Humane Society posted an update, because now they've got my full attention, right? Atlas was still a little bit skittish. He was not used to being surrounded by caring hands instead of abusing hands. But he was responding. Atlas was responding to the kindness and compassion of the veterinarians and the support staff as they treated his injuries. And the Humane Society posted this day after photograph. Now, you can still see the damage to the rims of his ears, and there's no doubt there's more damage inside of him. But he was sort of propped up in the arms of a good person. I think a veterinarian. They had a stethoscope anyway. And they were sort of propping him up with their hands on him. And you could see Atlas was responding to this compassionate human touch. People heard this story, and they were heartbroken and outraged. I'll bet you just heard this story, and you're heartbroken and outraged. You think, who could do this terrible thing? Well, within that day, within the first 24 hours, the owner of a local restaurant called Ike's Chili, and there was a couple named Eric and Jane Hayworth, and the Oklahoma Alliance for Animals came together and they pooled resources and they put up a reward, a $10,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and prosecution of the abuser. We got to find this guy. Chances are he's done it before and he will do it again. That search was underway. Atlas, in the meantime, started to get fan mail. The Tulsa Metro High School students got together. They sent him a basket of treats and balls and chews and doggy toys, along with these handmade greeting cards that said stuff like, "Go Atlas," and "We all love you," and "Feel better soon." You know, it's so cute what the kids had drawn. Images of chew bones and paw prints and hearts. One card actually had a hand-drawn picture of a dog. And it said, "Everyone needs a friend." The social media support came in from all over the world. I mean, this is Tulsa, Oklahoma. It wasn't just support locally in the state of Oklahoma, nationally. I mean, people from other countries were sending messages of support. And 5 days went by, and there was another post, an update from the Humane Society. Doctor said he'd recovered well enough for neuter surgery, but they were still kind of concerned about him. He had two fractured teeth, and he also had a urinary tract infection. I mean, the dog was still suffering, still in pain. It's still suffering from his wounds, and the veterinarians continue their work. There's a tooth extraction, and they do a fentanyl patch for pain and 2 weeks of antibiotics for the UTI, and there's hospitalization and all this stuff. But at least there's some kind of recovery that's going on. And the photographs from March the 5th warm the heart. This looked like a different dog. He looked like he was almost posing for the camera. He had this giant cone around his neck. Looks like a satellite dish, right? But his eyes were open and friendly, and his mouth was kind of open in that doggy smile kind of way. You know how dogs do that? It just made you smile in response. Meanwhile, the Creek County Sheriff's Office was on the hunt. Still no word on who had done this thing, who had hurt Atlas so badly. 5 more days go by, March the 10th, 2020. Posted by the Humane Society representative at the Creek County Sheriff's Office, they caught the guy. They caught him. The abuser was under the jurisdiction of Native American tribal authorities, and so the arrest was tasked to the Muscogee Nation Light Horse Tribal Department, which is a cool name, by the way. Like, I'd like to be a part of Light Horse Tribal Department. That just sounds like a some kind of a superhero thing. In handcuffs, 18-year-old Daniel Williams. And from the Okmulgee County Jail, his mugshot was posted for everybody to see. And that guy will be prosecuted for the pain that he inflicted. Now, upon the news of the arrest, the Humane Society posted these words: "I have tears in my eyes and I can barely see what I'm typing at the moment to know that we just got justice for Atlas. When we began this journey with him, we always hoped for the best, but knew in our hearts that finding the actual perpetrator would be a very difficult task. Kudos to Creek County Sheriff's Office for their diligent work. We did it, Atlas. We did it. There are more good people than bad. I struggle with these stories, these kinds of stories. It taps into the uncivilized part of my heart. If I'm going to be totally honest, I mean, I have a fantasy about taking this guy out and putting acidic chemicals on his skin so they burn, and gluing his eyes and his ears shut and firing around into his body and tying his arms and legs together and just leaving that motherfucker in a field. I am not proud of this. I don't like feeling this way. You know, I know that trial by mob is not how a civilized society promotes a civilized society. I can logically, in my brain, my rational brain, I can draw that line. There is a line between vengeance and justice. But vengeance sometimes just feels like it would be so sweet. So sweet. Give that guy a taste of his own medicine. Let him know what it feels like. Treat him the way he treated others. You know, in the dark parts of my heart, I have these thoughts. And I've had to make this sort of concentrated effort to remember that I am not him, that we are not him. We don't fight abuse with abuse. We don't respond to torture with torture. We don't become what we despise. We must be better. We must do better. And then beyond that, I get discouraged because I know I live in a world where these kinds of abuses happen every single day. People without a conscience doing unconscionable things to others. On that level, I get it. I understand why a whole lot of people say the world's going to hell. People are crazy. It's a jungle out there. You know, let the giant asteroid come and just knock us all into oblivion because that's what we deserve. Sometimes I can relate. People suck. People are the worst. It's the inhumanity of humanity. I got to sit back and I got to close my eyes and I got to breathe and I got to say, you know what? Perspective. Get some perspective. Calm yourself down and think this through. Atlas was hurt by one man, one person, but he was helped by so many others. Two hands caused the pain. Dozens, even hundreds of hands helped the pain go away. One person abandoned him in a field. So many others undid the bindings and picked him up and carried him to a soft, safe place and restored his sight and restored his hearing and made the pain subside and touched him in a way that caused Atlas to lean in and to enjoy and to trust and connect and to smile that doggy smile, right? I need this reminder. I need this reminder of human goodness and a reminder of the proportions. One bad person versus hundreds and hundreds of good ones. The villains can do an awful lot of damage in a short amount of time. And they can inflict so much pain and so much suffering. They can make us question ourselves. They can make us question the world we live in. They can fill good hearts with bad feelings and lots of despair. But the reason that this affects us in such a way, it's that we're not those people, right? We're the antithesis of those people. The reason we hurt is because we are good. It hurts us because we want to alleviate suffering and we want to foster goodness. It hurts us because we care. And when we participate in healing some of the hurt in this crazy world, we get to experience something that the abusers will never know. They'll never know. They'll never know what it's like to have a full heart and gratitude and optimism and love and hope for humanity and that unique joy, you know, that joy that comes from being a force for good in somebody else's story. That's a unique kind of rush that these people, the abusers, will never know. Now here's the happy ending. Atlas is going to be okay. He's on the road to a loving and safe, happy, forever home. They got people lining up to adopt him and care for him. And his single story, this one example, provides us right here an opportunity to look beyond the worst of us and to see so many others who are the best of us. And that's what I wanted to talk about here. Just some encouragement. You know, next time you feel discouraged, the next time you worry about the whole world, the next time you start to lose your faith in humanity, I want you to stop and I want you to remember the story of Atlas. Remember the story of Atlas and remember how people around the world joined together to give him a second chance. I'd like to know what you think about this. Finally, the patience of our callers on the switchboard pays off. 469, hi, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who is this?
This is Michael from Plano, Texas.
Michael, we're talking about the goodness or lack of in people. What do you think?
I think children are born what is known as tabula rasa, which is just blank slates. And that whatever is perceived as good and or bad is taught to them by their parents. So let's say the horrible monster that shot up that dog, maybe their parents taught them that that's what you do to dogs, that learned them from their parents, and so on and so on. But I think how we know that suffering is bad is when suffering has been visited upon us. So that way our sense of sympathy and empathy kick in, and we realize, I've felt that pain. I know that pain's wrong, and that is why I don't want to visit it on other people or stop those who are doing the same.
There is a lot of merit to the formative processes that happen around, you know, a child who is developing sort of a moral framework. And we see a lot of the worst in society, if you trace their histories back, what you say is true, right? They have an abusive parent, or they have been in an environment that twisted what should be a moral compass to face the wrong direction. But if there is not abuse at the beginning of the picture, if there's not somebody who is distorting the child's view of the world and damaging them psychologically, if that's not the case, right, that extreme example, beyond that, do you see that most people would develop a sense of ethical behavior? They would rather help than harm. They would rather do good. Maybe they understand that it comes back in some way on them. I don't believe in karma, but I mean, I do believe in cause and effect. Without an abuser in that scenario, do you think most people would be good?
I think they would do good in an effort to make themselves feel better, possibly. I also think that there is an equilibrium between good and bad. And most of us are just trying to get through our lives unscathed and not cause too much harm to ourselves or others, but by the same token, not doing much to enhance ourselves or others. I think that people will become good just because they want less harm to come to society. And, of course, there are those outside of that realm, like the person who had been arrested.
All right, I get that. Anything else you want to add?
Nope, that was it. Thanks for the time, Seth. I appreciate everything you do.
It's an honor to talk to you. Thanks for calling. You know, one of the arguments about morality is it selfish for us to commit ourselves to moral deeds because we think it will come back on us? Right? What helps someone else helps the society, which then helps me. So it's not altogether altruistic to be kind to another. But even that, I think, is an argument for ethical behavior. Like, so what? Maybe it helps us or feels good. This is an argument for cooperation, for pro-social behavior. Now, that's a valid reason, one valid reason, to help someone else, right? What helps you makes your life better. You then reciprocate, and it comes back into my zip code in some way. I mean, that's not a bad reason to be moral to someone else. 256, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
This is Sean in Elkmont, Alabama.
Welcome, Sean. Talk to me. What's your opinion?
The question to me, I really don't care for the phrasing of it. I think what's really going on is that human beings, we're this crazy mix of individuals, but we're also social by nature. And it has a lot to do with our biology, I think. You know, I mean, an old Clint Eastwood line comes to mind, you know, a man alone is easy prey. And it's, you know, we're weak, we're slow, we don't have claws and teeth. You know, so we have to band together, but we still have these individual urges and drives, and it's this tension between the two. And none of us are completely selfless, but on the other hand, none of us are completely selfish either, unless we're a sociopath, and, you know, that's something wrong with the wiring in their brain, as far as I'm concerned. But for the most part, you know, most of us, you know, my experience, I'll be 50 this year, my experience in life is that I have rarely run across anyone who is deliberately, intentionally malicious. Most people tend to be, you know, what you would say, good by nature. You know, they're not looking to screw you over. They're not looking to do you wrong. But, you know, human beings, we're not perfect. And it's, you know, the flip side of the question that you're asking today, you know, straight from Christianity, you know, where you're told we're all inherently evil by nature. You know, we come out of the womb lying, according to scripture, right?
Yeah.
And it's this, I think it's this tendency with the way that our minds work, is that we tend to think in absolutes. You know, what's the best possible way to be? What's the worst possible way to be? We don't like to face the fact that we're this muddled mix in between the two, you know, like from Shakespeare, what a piece of work is man, right? Or from scripture, how fearfully and wonderfully we're made. So I guess that's just the best I hear in just a short time that I can sum it up. I think we tend toward the good side, but we all have the capability of being bad. And any person who's honest with themselves has to admit that. You know, like you were just talking a little bit ago about these thoughts that come to your mind about this person that was so cruel to this animal. You know, we have these urges inside of us, but most of us can restrain them. Unfortunately, there are those walking among us who, for whatever reason, they can't restrain these urges and these impulses. And when that plays out, you know, like you were talking at the beginning about when we see the mass shootings on the news or whatever, we're all shocked and outraged. And to me, that's a healthy sign that most of us aren't behaving that way. And being a naturalist-minded person, I tend to think that there's some type of organic defect, however it plays out. And because we're not perfect, you know, genetics, biology, evolution, we're going to see these things. We always have. I don't think there'll ever come a day when we're perfected. I think that's wish thinking. But overall, if you look at the climb of humanity from the savannah, we have to be more toward what you would call the good side. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this civilization with 7.5 billion people walking the earth that, for the most part, day to day, works beyond your wildest dreams.
I think that makes a lot of sense, my friend. And, you know, it's certainly not a binary picture. That's true. So I appreciate your opinion very much.
All right. Thank you, Seth.
Yeah. Pro-social behaviors. I mean, he was talking about the fact that, you know, an individual on the African savanna is easy meat. It is when we band together and act in a pro-social and cooperative way that we are more likely to survive. I think that most people, though, for that reason, have evolved pro-social tendencies. And I actually am convinced that we have evolved so that pro-social behavior feels good. So there's a reward system, a reason to continue to be a helper instead of someone who hurts other people. Lyra in the chat said, so Seth, when drugs and alcohol are involved, does that justify cruelty? I have no idea where that comes from. At no point have I tried to justify cruelty. Justin said, I'm sorry, Seth, but you're coming across a little naive. We are animals deep down, and society only works because of the law. I profoundly disagree. If you abolish the law, you would see some people who are acting in antisocial ways. But I think you would immediately and more often see cooperation. You would see another kind of structure, a beneficial pro-social structure, begin. So the idea that the only reason I'm not out murdering somebody or raping somebody right now is because there's a law that was passed somewhere that a court would enforce that makes it wrong, for me, that's crazy. That makes no sense. Most people are not out raping and killing today because somebody passed a law. I just disagree profoundly. 747, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Hi, who is this?
This is Richard.
Richard, do you have an opinion on this? Are people inherently good?
In my opinion, no.
Can you tell me why?
I don't know. I'm just not treated good by hardly anybody.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I mean, that's a tragic and personal experience. People in your circle have treated you poorly?
Yep.
And that has informed your opinion about all people everywhere? 7 billion people?
Well, I know there's some people that are good, but there's not very many around here.
Well, I'm genuinely sorry to hear that, my friend. You are among friends now, for what it's worth, okay?
I know. I've been listening to a lot of you people, like you and Matt Delahante and Aaron Raw, you know, all the atheist stuff.
Yeah.
And you people sound like, you people seem to have more care about, you know, than what most of these Christians are. It's like, if you don't believe in God or something, you're like a piece of trash.
Well, we atheists can, you know, we can surprise you sometime.
And you know, I was grown up in a Christian family believing that atheists were bad people, and I pretty much would differ with that now.
Well, I'm glad to hear. You know, try to keep a little hope and optimism, because I would like to think
it's actually the Christians that are the bad people. And I have something I wanted to say about the story you was talking about, the dog earlier.
Yeah, please.
This person might, you said he got caught and he's in jail, right?
Right now,
but
he's in custody.
I doubt very highly that he would get as high of a sentence for doing this to a dog as he would got if he would have done it to a human. I don't think they'll do with him, give him the same sentence, which makes me pretty angry.
Well, it remains to be seen what his sentence will be. I'm hoping he doesn't lawyer his way out of it somehow. I think public pressure right now is going to probably ensure that he's punished in some significant way, and I'll try to post that whenever it happens, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Appreciate you, my friend. You are among friends, and thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You bet. Okay. Back to the idea of sociopaths and pro-social behavior. I wrote about this in a chapter of my upcoming book, comes out in May or June, depending on the publisher. But Richard Kuklinski, serial killer known as the Iceman, cold-blooded killer. He worked for the mob, and the guy was just, he executed people left and right. He had no fear. He had no remorse. He is the most terrifying kind of person you could run into. No empathy whatsoever, right? This is a monster among us. I mean, I say is. He died like 15 years ago in prison. And he was interviewed by a world-renowned psychiatrist in the HBO documentary called The Iceman and the Psychiatrist. And he sat down and they had a conversation. At the end, the psychiatrist was saying that, you know, Richard, you were born with a tendency toward fearlessness. This was part of his personality. Yet he was not nurtured and loved and cared for when he was a baby and a young person. He was beaten up by his dad and he was horribly abused and his mom was distant and he had a horrifying childhood. And because of that, his tendency for fearlessness didn't result in pro-social behaviors where he did like a dangerous job, like a police officer, or join the military, become a fireman, or attempt these sort of high danger sports, you know, kind of thing, or activities that a lot of people do. He didn't exhibit that fearlessness in a productive way. It instead, informed by the abuse of his childhood, manifest itself in antisocial behaviors, where he began to hurt animals and then he began to hurt and kill people. Had he been treated differently at the formative road, who knows what he might have done for society to benefit humanity? And that's a reality. So there's a real truth to the idea that it's nature and nurture that work together to form much. It's a hugely complex issue, right? Because there's a possibility anyway that this mass murderer, Richard Kuklinski, the Iceman, under different circumstances, might have been a beneficial part of the human condition. Imagine what that might have looked like. So many more perspectives from our listeners. Let me take a short break. I'll be right back with more of your phone calls right after this. Let me tell you about my secret weapon for learning new stuff. It's a life hack, so to speak, for those of us who just need more time, who want to expand our knowledge, but we struggle with how to get more hours in the day. Well, Blinkist is an incredible app that solves the problem. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, web browser. It grabs the best key takeaways and the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and it laser-focuses them into about 15-minute reads or listens if you do the audio versions. It's the main points of the book. Right there, you can quickly digest them and then decide to go deeper into the larger book or move on to the next Blinkist book and get the next nuggets of information. 12 million people use Blinkist right now on a drive at the gym, on a lunch break. These are self-help books, business books, health and nutrition, biographies, so much more. I like to use Blinkist when I travel. You can check out the Blinkist version of Michelle Obama's biography called Becoming, his terrific book, and Outgrowing God, the new one from Richard Dawkins, kind of a primer to atheism for the uninitiated. It's also a great articulation of why you and I reject God claims, as we want to be rational, science-minded, and moral people. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books. All the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Seth. Try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/Seth to start your free 7-day trial. And you'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/Seth. It's easy to get cynical in this crazy world. We see so many bad people doing bad things to good people. It's hard to hold on to the idea that most people are inherently good. At the top of the show and throughout the opener, I said I really do think most people are good. But opinions are all over the place. You know, people's perspectives are often much different than mine. We go back to the switchboard to get your perspective. 785. Hi, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
My name is Sabrina. The Dalai Lama said the reason why bad things that happen are news is because it's uncommon, that it doesn't happen all that often. So when I was younger, I was not treated very well, but I learned to be more compassionate after that. But some people don't, how do you say, switch that way. You're either going to learn compassion or not compassion, so to speak. Someone said something about the Christian people. In Buddhism, when you're born pure. And I think the way people are treated when they're real young, like as a baby, you're held and you're treated well and you're loved while you grow up. The Buddhist concept that you have a nature at your core, it's just covered up with stuff. So, but like I said, I've experienced that many people are very nice. It's just, it's just the formative years that determine, for the most part, where a person is going to go.
Sabrina, can I ask you what the catalyst was for the sort of the turning point? Were people kind to you at a key moment in your life?
Well, I went into the military, and in the military, you're not brown, you're not white, you're not different colors, you're all green. That's back when we wore the green uniforms. And the idea is you have to work together. I heard that commercial, Army of One. No, you're not an Army of One. You're a group. But I learned to become stronger, and it helped me deal. And when I became a Buddhist, I learned to look at things differently and also to understand that when someone behaves a certain way, there might be, if I like mean to you, that they might have something going on in their lives, which is just being brought toward you. You know what I mean?
We've all seen examples of somebody who lashed out and they were angry and had negative behaviors on the outside to mask confusion and pain and other issues on the inside. You know, I understand. Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're trying to say. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
We did a show on Buddhism a few years ago, and you know, I walked away from the show outside of a lot of the, you know, the superstitious stuff. The philosophies of Buddhism, I dig. Like secular Buddhism, I get that. I think there's a lot of noble concepts and good ideas, stuff about mindfulness and perspective and those types of things. So it sounds like your catalyst was largely internal. You just sort of built yourself up, shored yourself up, and managed to sort of overcome on your own terms.
Yes, that's basically it. And as far as Buddhism is more philosophy, someone asked the Buddha, are you a god? He said, no. Are you this? He went down the line of different celestial beings, and he says, well, what are you then? And Buddha said, I'm awake. He never claimed to be a deity at all, so... But his teachings really helped me a lot.
All right.
So,
well, you're a badass. You give us hope. You give us, another happy ending to the story. Thanks for sharing yours on the radio. Appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh. I think there is a supernatural component. I mean, Buddhism is one of those where there's a lot of good stuff to take as far as a philosophy and model for living and the structure of it and the ritual of it. The attitudes behind it. But I think at its core, Buddhism is still rooted in superstition. And so this is an example of where you can take the woo and just go and just sort of discard it quickly. But there's a lot left that we can perhaps benefit from. Somebody said something earlier in the show that I want to address, about how it was the atheists who were kind and most Christians are awful. That's not true. It may have been true in my caller's life, and I'm so sorry for that, but people in and out of religion are largely good. I wasn't an awful person. My friends and family, my neighbors, my associates, my fellow churchgoers were not bad people. There's tremendous amount of love and support and kindness and charity and empathy within the church. People who are God believers, they're just people. They got the window dressing of superstition coloring most of the humanistic endeavors that they do, but they will stop and help you change the spare tire on the side of the road. They will jump into a dangerous situation to try to rescue somebody else. They genuinely want to feed the hungry. They genuinely want to distribute medicine and resources to the infirmed. They care. So in the bigger picture, beyond the microcosm of my caller's world, which is unfortunate, you know, religious people are not the caricatures of awfulness that some atheists like to talk about. And if we're going to be fair, and we must be fair as rationalists, we have to acknowledge that people are people. And even in religious circles, right, they are largely good people. Many of them are just victims of bad ideas. They've been taught that the reason they're good is a deity, like a cosmic father. They've been taught that the reason that they have a tendency toward ethical, pro-social behavior is because the Holy Spirit is in there driving them. Instead, it's their own evolved sense of conscience and the reality that cooperative behavior is better for everybody. I mean, they'll attribute a supernatural reason to humanistic efforts, but they're still doing good. So I take issue with the idea that, you know, religious people, Christians are awful. There are some awful Christians. Awful Christians. They exist. But you know what? Awful people exist, including some awful atheists. It's a human problem and not quite as much a religious problem. 914, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Thanks for waiting. Who's this?
Yardi.
Yardi, thanks for calling.
Yes.
Do you have an opinion, perspective? What do you think?
I don't think people are inherently good. I think it's just about your geographical location, your personal experiences, your parents' background, like socioeconomic background, that type of thing. And even with that, I don't think it's set in stone that you're going to be good. There might be a specific experience that you have that might change your outlook on life, and you just turn into a very terrible person. For example, my mother, like, she went through a lot of traumatic experiences when she was younger. And she's the nicest person that you would ever know. And you would expect, right, like she, because she went through so many experiences, like so many terrible experiences, that she would be a horrible person. But it's actually the opposite. And sometimes you can't really judge whether or not a person is going to turn out to be good or bad. So I don't know. It's really a tough question to answer. But I think it's just a combination of your experiences, the people that you know, you know, obviously your background, your the kind of money that you have. And even if you have money, like, you know, Harvey Weinstein, it doesn't really matter.
It's an interesting social experiment, isn't it? What about the people who were raised or brought up or surrounded by awfulness who overcame and lived a good ethical, moral life? And what about the people who were surrounded by love, goodness, compassion, support, and they turned out to be evil?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
A valid point.
That's what I say. Like, it's not very, like, easy to figure out. You can have the best parents, the best, you know, upbringing, and still turn out to be the worst person. Scary to think about, but
something for us to think about. Something certainly we can chew on here in the broadcast. I'll send it out to chat, see what they come up with. Thanks for being a part of the broadcast. Take care.
Thank you, Seth. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much. 678, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
This is Katie from Georgia. Back to the dog issue, as a person who currently lives with six rescue dogs, I would tell people to start getting a handle on this issue, a true handle on this issue. We've got to start locally. If you don't have an animal alliance in your area, try to start one and start hitting up your city councilman, your mayors, your local politicians, and try to get laws to protect the dogs. Here we just currently, maybe a year ago, finally got a law that no animal can be tethered outside for more than just is absolutely necessary for potty breaks and that kind of thing. You can't just tie that dog outside anymore.
I've never understood that. Like, you have a dog, and then you make it live on a 7-foot chain tied to a tree for most of its life. I've never
understood. If you want a yard ornament, get a damn statue, for God's sake.
Get a garden gnome. Don't get a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I love animal rescuers. Can you tell me your dog's names real quick? Because I must know.
Socrates, my aspirations were a little high. Cheyenne, S-H-Y-E-A-N-N. She's not. Sister, Daisy Doodle.
That's adorable.
Charlie Barker. And Jack Dawkins.
Charlie Barker is perhaps my favorite name out of some great ones, by the way.
His other name is Shut the Fuck Up, Charlie.
Shut the Fuck Up, Charlie. What was that?
Yeah, that's what he thinks his name.
That old line that said the two kids thought their name were Jesus Christ and damn it, because every time their dad called them in, they're like, Jesus Christ, would you stop? Damn it, get in here. Yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
One other tiny plug for anybody that wants to see the rescuer of all rescuers, as far as I'm concerned. On Facebook, there is a Boxer Butts and Other Mutts. This woman is unbelievable.
Say it again for
anybody,
me.
Boxer Butts and Other Mutts.
Boxer Butts and Other Mutts.
This woman is awesome.
All right.
And thank you for bringing this up to the top.
You betcha. Take care of yourself. I have time to take a few more calls. 920, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Bonnie.
Bonnie, thanks for calling.
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. I missed the first part. I assume there was a dog that was hurt real bad.
Yeah, there was a dog that was abused and abandoned who has been rescued, rehabilitated, and is on his way to a happier future. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when I see those on YouTube, I can't even hardly look because it hurts so much.
Yeah.
But there's a book, it's called High Risk Children Without Conscience. And I don't know if they still print it or not, but they made a law years ago that parents have to have, I think it's like 6 weeks off when a baby's born because of this particular book. Because when babies are born, they need loving eye contact right from birth on. And if they don't get that, it's almost impossible for them to look at their caregiver or their parent in the face, in the eye. And when they get to be 3, 4, 5 years old, it already shows, you know, that they will hurt animals and they can throw a kid off into the pool and drown them, you know. And you think that it's, you know, like you don't want to blame the kid or anything, but this shows up really young and it's because they don't have a conscience. And this is something that you can't really train a person to have. You can't train a person to have a conscience. And it's not that they're not born with it, but if they don't get that eye-to-eye contact and that love right from birth on, it's like they don't have that empathy. They don't have empathy. And I think with psychopathy, there's it's like 3% of the population are men that are actually psychopaths, and I think 1% of women. And it's passed on from generation to generation, like it runs in families. If, let's say, the mother and the father are abusive to the baby or the child, you know, the child doesn't know love, and so they grow up not knowing it and not having a conscience. And so it tends to run in families. And like when you're with people and they're more concerned about themselves and they don't really seem to listen to you, you know, they don't pay attention to you, it's a red flag, you know, like say when you're dating and the person doesn't really care anything about you, they don't ask you questions, you know, they don't, they're not really interested in you, they brag about themselves and all that kind of thing. And if you're the kind of person that's like that, you don't have the empathy either. We're actually surrounded by people like that. And it doesn't have anything to do with religion. Mostly it has to do with right from birth on, you know, if a person has that love and that caring. And nobody comes from a perfect family. Nobody does. Everybody has parents that, you know, are imperfect. And so we all come damaged. We all come damaged and to a certain extent. And we have, and most of us are self-centered. You know, we care about ourselves. That's just normal. And most of us have, it's like we empathize with when we lose our pets. But you can't empathize with somebody who has lost a pet. Well, if you're on YouTube and you see somebody that's been mistreated a dog, then you do, you know. But when it comes to other people, when they lose loved ones, we don't have the feeling that they would if they were our loved ones. So that's my thought.
I appreciate that very much. I'll take a look. I can't, you know, I don't know anything about the authors. I see Dr. Ken Majid and Carol McKelvey, the book, High Risk Children Without a Conscience.
Children Without Conscience. Yeah, Without a Conscience. It is one of the best books you're ever going to read. And we are surrounded with people like that. We all have empathy to a certain extent. And we're all self-centered to a certain extent. But evil, there are about 3%, I think it's either 3 or 6% of people that are actually psychopaths. And it comes from birth. But they don't commit crimes. But they if you know anything about psychopathy, they can pretend to fit in, but they don't really know what it is to be empathetic. And you can't teach it to them. You can't teach a person to be empathetic.
It reminds me of a documentary I just saw on Ted Bundy, the serial killer. They were talking about how many of these sociopathic doers of horrible things learn how to appear civilized on the outside, right? Mm-hmm. They're good at emulating civilized behavior. They're great pretenders. They're great actors, aren't they?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll take a look at the book. I appreciate the call so much. Thanks for listening.
Well, thank you for listening, too. Bye.
Bye. I don't know why every time there's a documentary on about the Iceman or Ted Bundy. One of my favorite films is the David Fincher movie Zodiac. Natalie says I have a dark side, which is not really true because I'm well-rounded. I like a lot of different kind of things, but I'm a sucker for a crime documentary, and I'm very interested in the dark shades of the human condition. What causes people to do what they do? How does society respond to evil deeds? And I don't ascribe a supernatural force behind the use of the word evil, but I like evil as a descriptor. You know, someone does evil things and they can be an evil person. It's not a satanic evil. It's more that they are just, you know, a shitty human being doing tremendously damaging things. I use evil in that context. It bothers some people. You know, they're like, evil, that's a religious concept. You know, language is fluid. You know what I mean. You're just being pedantic. 928, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hi, this is Eric from Arizona.
Eric, thanks for listening. Are people inherently good? That's what we're talking about. What do you think?
I don't think people are inherently good or evil. I think it's more dynamic than that, or Bayesian. I think as their environment changes and their experience changes, their nature changes. And I kind of get this idea from, I'm paraphrasing Dale Metry here, but he wrote about how if you really want to observe the moral nature of a human being, observe their behavior when they're starving to death. Because when the survival instinct kicks in, it can completely overwhelm logic and reason and any sense of morality or what is good and bad in someone's mind.
This reminds me of a teaching within the church where there was a guy named Mike Wells who used to run a program, a seminar, that he talked about the abiding life in Christ. And his was a religious concept. He believed that what you are at your worst moment is your true condition. I don't accept that, though. Are you saying that we are at our essence what we would be at our most desperate moments? Our body starved of nutrients, desperate for survival, we would then exhibit our true nature in those moments?
I'm not sure I would call that our true nature. I think our true nature is dynamic, and I think maybe in those circumstances that's our true nature. But if the stressors are relieved and life becomes easier and more pleasant, that your nature changes and you tend to become more good and have more sympathy and empathy. And I kind of disagree with the last caller, too. Now, sympathy and empathy, I kind of struggle with. I'm on the autism spectrum, and I have issues with that. And most of my morality is based on logic and reason, the idea that you don't want to crap on your neighbor's porch because he'll crap on your porch. But I think you can teach a conscience. I think that's actually part of the education system's job is to be teaching people to have a conscience, to ignore their baser instincts and recognize them when they well up, and to ignore their emotions and think more reasonably and more logically and how this is going to affect, their behavior is going to affect the people around them. And I think it's a failure of the education system, and I think we're also drifting society-wise in a direction that's worse. I think we're getting, on average, more bad. I guess I don't know how to define good and bad, but I think we're getting more bad. And I think it drifts back and forth. It's kind of like the Overton window in political science.
Can you define bad? I mean, if we see overall a more peaceful world today, I mean, I'm a big fan of Steven Pinker's work, right? The Better Angels of Our Nature. We talk about this civilization, the fact that there is less war. I mean, despite all the hideous, horrible things happening, less war, less suffering, less starvation than we had back in our more primitive times. How would you define bad when you say that things are more bad, people are more bad?
Well, I am struggling with the definition of bad, and I agree with you. I mean, as on a whole, the planet and humanity on whole, we're in a much better place than we were, say, 100 or 200 years ago, by far. I mean, you know, it's not even a comparison. I think our nature is more tribal, though, and you got to look at, you know, areas where societies are cohesive and kind of believe in the same things. And when you look at it down at that level, I'm seeing society, especially in this country, kind of drift to a less empathetic, less sympathetic, less caring nature, and away from more of a charitable, caring nature. And I think maybe it's just in this country, maybe in Europe as well. I see these trends, the political and economic trends. I see us moving a little towards bad, even though I can't really define bad for you.
You just defined my Twitter feed, by the way. People becoming, you know, more awful to each other. I think I get what you're saying, though. I mean, we're evolved animals, right? We're evolved primates, and sometimes shit gets primal out there. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. Okay. And like I said, I think a lot of it has to do with our environment and our current experiences, and which is why it's important to create a society that is the least stressful on the fewest number, the fewest number of people as possible. I think that's kind of the problem, is our society's getting more stressful and more economically stressful on people, more politically stressful. This polarization that's happening, it's really terrible, because I look back 20, 30 years ago, and we didn't care if our neighbors or our family members were Democrats or Republicans. We didn't have these kinds of hatred towards people with different ideas and thoughts. And maybe it's just my pocket of society where I see this happening, but I definitely see it happening.
I appreciate your call. Appreciate the perspective. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you. It was nice to talk to you.
You bet. I have to disagree, I think. I've just finished writing a book that's coming out that talks about, we are tribal. You know, we kill each other over differences and beliefs of all shapes and stripes. This is human history. And people killed each other over differences in religion, differences in kings and queens and philosophies, kill each other over land, resources and money and gold. Hell, even back in the mid-20th century, I mean, the idea that political parties got along, I don't think is correct. One party was pitched against the other to an extreme. And we had the Cold War that was providing the backdrop for those divisions. I don't think there's anything new under the sun. 719, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hi, this is Kyle.
Kyle, what's on your mind?
So I was just thinking about how perfect of a time after you saying that for if you were to pick up the phone for me. I'm going to kind of pull my thought system off of a few books. One of them I think you're kind of aware of, which is Alpha Gods. There's The Founding Myth, and then there's Sapiens. And I think when you take concepts from those three books and you kind of compare them to each other and think about it, I think people are full of empathy and sympathy for their in-group, essentially. You have Dunbar's number, which is a proposal that people can really only maintain cohesive relationships with 100 to 250 people. And then you have the founding myth brings up our founding fathers and how some of them thought that religion was good for people who couldn't understand sometimes how to reason your way through morality and alpha gods. And I think it's an in-group, out-group situation where maybe the internet kind of screws these things up in a way. You can have maybe Tom Hanks mentally on your in-group and you have sympathy for him. You feel, oh no, he's got the coronavirus or something now. So you reserve your sympathy and your thought and you feel bad when he gets it, but your neighbor down the street that you've never spoken to, you don't care because they're not in your in-group.
Like if Mike Pence got coronavirus, I would probably, it would be harder. You're right. It'd be because he would not be in my ideological or moral in-group. You're right. I would have less sympathy for the guy based on his history. That's true.
I think it's just, it's a problem of the monkey brain. It maybe the internet's a helpful thing too, though, because maybe people can kind of develop ways of feeling more empathy for everybody, you know, empathy and for people in India or in Bangladesh or somewhere far off that normally you wouldn't care or you wouldn't even know.
Thanks for calling, my friend.
Yeah, thank you.
Full disclosure, I read the audiobook of Alpha God by Dr. Hector Garcia. And he deals with the primate brain and how tribes worked and how the dominant male was responsible for the formation of these man-made gods that have male characteristics in almost every instance. And those characteristics reflect the primitive males of the time. Right? They are jealous. They are power hungry. They are always procuring and sequestering resources. They are killing another for their land and their women and their stuff. And, you know, it's an interesting exploration into the alpha male attitudes that help to build humankind's gods. That's why I wanted to be a part of the audiobook when it released. And it's an interesting, it's like 10 and a half, 11 hours, if you're interested in that. I appreciate him bringing it up. Dr. Garcia also talks about the cooperative nature of tribes and the civilized brain. And, you know, whenever the caller was talking about monkey brain, you know, it's a monkey brain thing, which I think, by the way, is a t-shirt. That should be on a t-shirt. That and Let's Get Primal, I think, have come out of this show. We should put those on a t-shirt and just make those up. But it's an interesting journey through the primate brain. 360, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. My name is Zach.
Hi, Zach. What's on your mind?
I'm trying to pursue a major in psychology, and I've just noticed there's been misconceptions with people who have sociopathy. As far as my professors and I have discussed, people who have been diagnosed with sociopathy, or you know, people who are sociopaths, can actually exhibit signs of empathy with a caveat that we can shut our emotions down at will, usually when it comes to a hyper-stressful situation. Speaking for myself, there's this weird hosh-posh diagnosis I was given because I have severe PTSD, where they're saying I have what appears to be a borderline sociopathy due to the PTSD. And I've always enjoyed the term principled sociopath, because like the idea of hurting an animal, you know, I think it is one of the worst things a person can do. So with this person who did hurt the dog, you know, maybe a person is, you know, a sociopath, but I think there's more to it, because even a person with sociopathy can be taught right from wrong, depending on the situation as they're growing up. They learn those rules that you live by to function in society, even if you don't feel them on, say, an emotional level.
From your background then as a student of psychology, is there a sliding scale? Are there some people who are so sociopathic that empathy for them would be impossible?
Yes, but therein lies the issue of whether they have been raised with those, you know, those principles. Like, I'm not going to hurt another person because I know it's the wrong thing to do. I live my life with a mentality of doing as much good as possible, as least harm as possible. I don't feel anything on an emotional level, regardless of me doing good or bad. I just know that doing something bad is going to be detrimental, and I don't want to ever cause anybody else harm, same way I wouldn't want them to cause me harm. I like to think of it more as like a rational outlook instead of an emotional outlook.
And it's another play on the nature versus nurture thing, right? The two playing off each other.
Yes.
Fair enough. Thanks for your perspective. Good luck in your studies, man. I hope it goes well for you.
One last thing. I think around the same time when Obama legalized marriage equality, I do believe he also signed an executive order making all cruelty to animal crimes felonies due to the discrepancies in how different states were dealing with it.
The challenge we have here in our specific case, and it may not be a challenge, is that because it happened on tribal land, tribal authorities have their own sets of law that are often separate from other mandates, federally, state, and local. So I don't know what tribal law says about animal abuse, and this remains the big question. But again, public pressure, I think, is going to help in that regard. We'll see what happens, okay?
All right. You have a good day.
Take care. Thank you so much. I'd like to think they'll do the right thing. One more. 402, you're on the Thinking Atheist podcast. Who's this?
This is Heath in Nebraska.
Hi, Heath. What's on your mind? What do you think?
Well, I was listening to the show, and I appreciate it. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
And what I kind of got the impression was that there was a lot of people with varying opinions, and I think that in a subjective question, you're going to get that. So the question is if people are inherently good, that kind of boils down to a kind of a subjective point of view.
Because how do you define good, you mean?
How you define good or reduce harm, if that's the goal. So I think what we're trying to get to is morality a subjective part of reality, or can we call it relative?
Well, you know, it's always funny to hear, like my former evangelical conservative culture would talk about the dangers of moral relativism. But morality and ethical behavior really is situational, isn't it? You know, there are instances that change from day to day, point to point, moment to moment. I like what Dan Barker said in terms of ethical behavior. He said he wants to act to minimize harm, which I think is a great starting point.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, it's not a binary thing. Doesn't fit in a cookie cutter. Doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, right?
Well, I've listened to Apologia on YouTube quite a bit here recently, and I like the way he looks at it, is that it can be objective if we have a goal in mind. Otherwise, it comes from a subjective kind of place. Maybe I'm misrepresenting Apology. I'm sorry if I am, but I think that if we have a common goal as a society, we don't want to murder each other or whatever, that would be considered a common goal, and then we could probably look at it as an objective type of thing there, but it all stems from the subjective where we don't want to get murdered.
Yeah. The world doesn't fit in a 280-character Twitter post. In most instances, I think that's probably the lesson we can take away. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Yep. Bye.
That's all the time I've got. I am so thankful for you, for the calls, for the input, for listening, for being a part of the community and my family. I believe you are inherently good. We raise a glass to Atlas. Wish him a speedy recovery. Glad for his happy ending. And on my social media pages, if I get any updates on the prosecution of his abuser, I'll try to get those notes out as soon as I see them. Have a wonderful week. I'll see you soon.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. for a complete archive of podcasts and videos, products like mugs and t-shirts featuring the Thinking Atheist logo, links to atheist pages and resources, and details on upcoming free thought events and conventions, log on to our website, thethinkingatheist.com.